Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stuart Thompson. Welcome to Personal Transformation. I'm broadcasting live from the Gatehouse here in Toronto, Ontario, or Old Etobicoke, as I really rather say, but it is Toronto now, all in one. We are located at 3101 Lakeshore Boulevard West in Toronto, Etobicoke. And, well, tonight is a very special night. I have two people with me. I am so honored to have you guys by my side. First, I have Maria Barcelosas. She is the ED of the Gatehouse. And a double bonus for me tonight, I have, and again, by the way, we're honoring women. This is just another segment where we're honoring women who were survivors of childhood sexual abuse, but I cannot speak for Sabra. Sabra Desiree is my next guest with me here tonight as well. And you are also involved in the Gatehouse quite a bit as well, and which I'll let you describe in more detail as we go along. But tonight we're going to be talking about our third annual Voices Within fundraiser that's coming up. But I want to say one other thing first, is I need to get it out of the way, just because I always say this, is I'm here offering my own experiences. I'm not a therapist. I'm not here to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. Although we do have a therapist here, lucky for us tonight, but we're not here on that capacity, so we're not taking any questions, rather on phone calls or anything like that, but I'm speaking for myself. But anyway, folks, welcome tonight, and welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you, Stuart.
So I guess we'll just dive right into it, and here we are at our third annual fundraising for the Voices Within. And I guess, first off, why don't you do an introduction, actually, it'd probably be better manners on my part. Sabra, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Stuart. Yes, my name is Sabra Desai. I'm a volunteer board member. I'm one of the directors for the Gatehouse, and I also volunteer for the drop-in sessions where individual survivors, it's co-ed, drop in whenever they feel the need to come in and be part of the group to get some support.
Thank you. And Maria?
Hi, I'm Maria Barcelos. I'm the executive director here at the Gatehouse. I've been with the Gatehouse for 7 years now.
Yeah, 7 years.
2011.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So what I'm curious, though, is how did you come up with the name Voices Within?
So Healing the Voice Within came out of a conversation between a few of the group members initially that came together. So Lacey Ford, who's the art therapist and co-founder of Full Circle Art Therapy Center, Pearl Lee, and Lauren Simon from MCPR, or Michael Public Relations Communications, Arthur Lockhart, myself, and Mary Grogan, as well as Stefan Hordecki. So Mary has been on your show before, also.
Yes.
Dr. Mary Grogan.
Dr. Mary Grogan, yeah.
Who is also an educator and has a counseling background. And Stefan Hordecki is also a member of the board, has done a plethora of things in criminal justice field, and restorative justice is his interest. We were having a conversation about forming a fundraiser, and the name Healing the Voice Within came from the idea of that every survivor, every human being has an inner child. And what happens to a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, one of the first things that happens is the loss of voice. And healing that voice within, that inner child, is where we as a group came up with that title.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a great name. It's really fitting for what we've seen and what we've done. I've been all three. Actually, this will be my third one, I should say, coming up. So it's perfectly fitting. So now can you talk a little bit more about why we have to do this to begin with? And this is so important. People need to understand why we are having a fundraiser. First off, the Gatehouse, we survive primarily on private donations and grants. Mm-hmm. We are not funded by the government or any government agency anywhere in Canada. And so therefore we have to rely on the public's help. So mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. We do get one grant from the City of Toronto.
Okay.
And again, it's something that we apply for each year through the Community Service Partner Grant. But aside from that, there is no core funding for the Gatehouse from any ministry or government agency, like you said. And we do have to look for grants and corporate donations. Individual donations is our biggest source of funding. But and we created the fundraiser to be another source of both awareness. That's a huge thing in this field to raise awareness about the issue of childhood sexual abuse and the impact, the devastating impact this has on people, and also raise funds for the Gatehouse. So that's how Yeah, we do our fundraising through fundraisers individually.
And that's not easy to do. And I hear and I see, I mean, I'm not really, I haven't really been involved in any way or fashion other than just being a participant in this grand event that's coming up. And I see all the work that's involved that mm-hmm. you're all doing. And there's so much involved in it. And another thing I want to point out to you as well, the Gatehouse has been around here for 20 years. We're celebrating 20 years as of this year since 1998. We've had over 20,000 people come through the Gatehouse. So this is very important in the community, and we want to keep it going. But can you elaborate more about this event in regards to how you've orchestrated it all together?
Sure. I love how you say how you've orchestrated it. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. There's a whole committee of people
exactly.
involved. We have six, maybe seven honorary chairs now who are helping Peter McKay, the Honorable Peter McKay, the honorary chair of the event.
Yes.
And he's our keynote speaker this year. We're very grateful to Mr. McKay for lending his voice to this event. And he's a very keen and forward advocate for survivors of sexual abuse, sexual assault, human trafficking is one of his passions to, you know, diminish that and help people regain a sense of self and find healing in the aftermath of trauma and human trafficking or sex trafficking. We have the Carpenters Union, Chris Campbell, who's also a co-chair of the event, and they've supported by donating $5,000 to the Gatehouse.
Awesome.
We have the Labor's International Union of North America, or LIUNA. Both their local and their head office have donated $20,000 to the event.
Awesome.
Toyota on the
Even
Park.
More awesome.
Toyota on the Park. Yes, we're very grateful to LIUNA. The event is presented by LIUNA. We have Toyota on the Park that's also donated $5,000 towards the event, and an avid believer in supporting children's charities. I actually met with some folks from Toyota, Marina, who's an awesome advocate for this. We also have Social Know-How, which is a social media company based in Vaughan, so shout out to them. And to Elio Gatto, who is their ED out there. He's been instrumental in showing us, you know, social media strategies and ways to engage people on social media. Mm-hmm. We have Humber School of Social and Community Services. I can never, ever thank them enough. Humber's been an instrumental partner over the many years supporting the Gatehouse. They've donated money to this event as well. Full Circle, of course, Art Therapy Center. Lacey, Pearl, if you're listening, shout out to you, lovely ladies. And Liberty Grand is where we're hosting it this year. And they've also sponsored the event and have been instrumental in the planning phases and very supportive. And we've accessed their space. They're very flexible in helping us to access their space and have answered questions and repetitive questions for me as with setting up any function. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of logistics to consider, and they've been very supportive in that respect.
And just a point, that I'm going to have Lacey in here on October 27th.
Yeah.
It's coming in to do a follow-up interview in regards to this event mm-hmm. as well. So there's some other guests there too as well, which you haven't mentioned. Actually, there's a couple more board members that are involved in this as well,
yes.
Right? And we have some of our finest Toronto's finance part of the board that are part of this as well.
That's right. Tony Vella, or should I say police constable Tony Vella, is involved.
Yeah.
He's part of the board, our board of directors, and also the board that's involved in the planning committee. We have Leah Antonova from DAMA Event Management, who's helping us plan the event as well. Shout out to Leah. She's beautiful and awesome. We have Dr. Mary Grogan,
yeah.
Who's our fundraising chair as part of our board and part of this committee. Stefan Hordecki as well.
Yeah.
Is helping out and lots of volunteers.
Is Rita, isn't she part of this as well?
Rita Grenchy is the co-chair of
our
Gatehouse board. She will be closing the event.
Okay.
She's involved in helping out with the agenda.
And then there's one other important person, which we haven't, actually two other people we haven't mentioned.
Dr. Alok Mukherjee is another
yes.
Board member who's also part of this committee, and he's a distinguished visiting professor at Ryerson University. He's been an avid supporter of the Gatehouse for many, many years, and social justice, human rights advocate, former chair of the Toronto Police Services Board as well. Arthur Lockhart, who's the founder of the Gatehouse, is also part of the planning committee. And
there's a superintendent that's going to be there too.
Yes, Superintendent Ron Tavener
yes.
from 22 Division and 23, and I believe he's managing another division as well. He's actually been a co-chair for the past 3 years,
yeah.
and he's back again. He actually just recorded an ad. So if you're listening to Z103.5 FM, they're also a sponsor of the event. They've provided free advertising for us. Superintendent Tavener was just on there recording, you know, his voice to promote the event. So it'll be on Z103 playing out. We also have David Butt, who's a criminal lawyer. He's part of the committee. He also recorded an ad, so you'll hear him on the radio if you listen to Z103.5. And yeah, lots of support around this committee and this event. And, you know, with the awareness of the Me Too campaign, mm-hmm. and then there's Me Too CSA, where people are talking about childhood sexual abuse specifically,
yeah.
in addition to Me Too sexual harassment in the workplace, has brought, you know, this issue more to the forefront, which is really great for what we're going to be talking about later on mm-hmm. in the show.
Sabra, is there anything you'd like to add to this long?
Yes, Stuart, I would
great
like
event
to.
That's coming up.
Absolutely. Maria has outlined and very clearly mentioned all the sponsors. And I think what it gives us, it paints a picture that it takes a lot of people, a lot of committed people, and many, many supporters. While we have the sponsors like Toyota on the Park, Full Circle, Humber College, LIUNA, which is the Labor International Union of North America, and all these sponsors have been extremely generous. But from my experience of being on the board, the monies that we raise to sponsor this particular fundraising event is not enough to cover the running operational costs of the Gatehouse. And with more awareness through the Me Too campaign and generally a little more awareness of childhood sexual abuse and assault in general, particularly sexual assault, we can see the need for the services of Gatehouse only increasing. Another point that I just want to elaborate on that Maria mentioned is that we do have grants. We have one core grant from the City of Toronto. Again, we're extremely thankful. All the other sources of funding, as in the case of the core grant from the City of Toronto, we have to be applying. And we have to apply not only once, but several times. And application for grants is a long process. It is a very demanding process because the funders also change their direction for the year or the focus for the year of the grants. So what I want to underscore is that finding sufficient funds to operationalize all the programs within Gatehouse is a continuing and growing challenge. And therefore, I am seeking on behalf of the Gatehouse staff, its volunteers, both the board volunteers and volunteers that come in to help with the different programs, please, to the public, help support this particular fundraiser called Healing the Voice Within. It's held at the Liberty Grand, as Maria mentioned. The address for the Liberty Grand is 25 British Columbia Road, Toronto. It's part of the exhibition ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on the 4th of October, which is a Thursday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the tickets are only $75. Those $75, if we all pool it together and contribute towards this fundraiser, can take us a long way in helping survivors of CSA, which is childhood sexual assault.
Thank you, mm-hmm. and we'll post it. We'll talk about this one more time when we're finished. Just remind our folks where it is, and if you're not sure what we're talking about, please go onto our website at thegatehouse.org, and you'll find details about mm-hmm. there as well. That's great. So, is there anything else you'd like to add to this, or would like to say?
Thank everybody that's been involved in creating this fundraiser and supporting it, including all of our students. We're mostly at this time Humber College students who are helping to promote the event and ask for donations. There's so many companies that have donated gifts and prizes. It's mm-hmm. going to be a wonderful event. Lots of different police services coming together to support the event. We have the deputy fire chief there as well. The RCMP is coming out. The Peel Regional Police is coming out. And, of course, Toronto Police will be there as well.
That sounds really, really awesome. So out of curiosity, do you have any idea how many hours you've got? I can just take a wild guess, but I know that last year, all I know is that when we were finished, probably within a week or 2 weeks after that, you were starting already again for this year.
That's right. It's as soon as the fundraisers, actually, you know, I had a conversation the other day with Leah from DAMA Event Management, and I said to her, this is great. This is the third. What are we doing for the fourth? We started talking about next year, right? Because the events like this take a lot of planning. They take a lot of time and effort and energy from everybody. And we want to make it like a beautiful event. So, we want to put that energy in.
Yeah, and I should point out too, the Cyber made a point about writing grants. Now, I've never really done it. I've only watched from watching Maria or anybody who else was doing here. There is a real art to doing this. And also, Sabra made another point, too, which is very, very important. Halfway through the year, after we've already written a couple of grants to this organization, they'll change their goals or they'll change their format they want, and then we got to go back and rewrite it again.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have to write it 3-4 times, Sabra wasn't kidding. That's usually the case. Mm-hmm. Just and even doing that does not mean we're going to get the grant.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's very competitive.
Yeah, this year, we have stretched the dollars as far as we can.
Mm.
And the board had to make a decision with the help of the executive director, Maria Vassilos, that question around staffing. We don't have enough staffing, but more importantly, we don't have the funds that make it possible to increase the staffing
mm-hmm.
complement that we have. And the funding has been such a challenge that we have to, in fact, make a very hard decision about letting a staff, kind of reducing the staff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if funding becomes tighter and tighter, I really don't know what we're going to do. So funding is very, very crucial.
Mm. Especially now. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, we've had hard years before and we've gone through, but times are different now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's approach on how to get funding, it's all changed again.
There's a lot of donor fatigue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the last meeting I was saying that every day I get 2 or 3 personalized approaches to sending funding to one organization or another. So we appreciate that there is a lot of competition for the donor
mm-hmm.
dollars, but we still beseech and implore people to think about supporting the Gatehouse.
Mm.
Every dollar counts, and sometimes people become overwhelmed. You know, they may have $5 to spare, and they're like, $5 isn't going to make a difference. But around here, like Cyber says, we do make those dollars stretch to the maximum utility, and we also ask for donations in kind of, you know, cleaning products or office paper, pens.
Coffee.
Coffee, exactly, of filters for the coffee machine. We take
cookies.
The round basket ones, if anybody wants to know. Cookies, people bake cookies. So, yeah, so money is one, and then in-kind donations is another. In-kind gift of time, right? We have our basement project that's going to come up very soon, and the house is getting a new foundation thanks to the City of Toronto. They're helping out with that, and we will need handy people to come and help with restoring the basement. So people do donate their time and expertise in other ways. If money is the issue, then we run on volunteers. Like there's over 100 volunteers that help this organization do what it does every year after year.
And what, since you're talking about volunteers, now do we need volunteers? Obviously, you just mentioned about volunteers
mm-hmm.
for our basement,
mm-hmm.
but overall, we need volunteers as well. To help run the house
mm-hmm.
For basic house maintenance. Not only do we need volunteers to do obviously what we do in peer support, but we need volunteers to help maintain the house,
mm-hmm.
such as out in the yard,
mm-hmm.
our beautiful garden we have out
yeah.
here, and which literally thousands of people come by every year to come take a look at
mm-hmm.
it. And
mm-hmm.
it takes time and effort to do it. We have some really dedicated people that come, but we can't always expect them to always be there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always looking for volunteers to help out around the house as well, not just inside the house,
mm-hmm.
facilitating, but maintaining the house as well.
I'm so glad, and thank you, Stuart and Maria, for drawing attention to the need for volunteers, because without the volunteers, we couldn't do it. I know as a board member, I've been focusing on money,
mm-hmm.
but the talking about the grounds is so important, because what we have here on the grounds as part of offering our services, if you will, to the larger, broader community. For example, we have a peace garden, which requires maintenance, as you said. We do have a dedicated volunteer, but we would like more. Then we have, and we are currently nurturing, a labyrinth, which is a very important part for anyone, but especially for people that are dealing with trauma. Doesn't have to be sexually related trauma, but any kind of trauma. And that labyrinth is open to the public. Whoever walking past on Lakeshore, past the gatehouse, can avail themselves for a few minutes walking through the labyrinth. All of this requires maintenance, so we appreciate volunteers.
And thank you for saying that. And it's just so important. But people, if you're not sure where we're located, I mentioned the address in the beginning of the program where we are, but we're situated on Humber College and right at Kipling and Lakeshore. And now we are basically right on Lake Ontario, we're to the south of us. And the grounds are phenomenal. They're beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I mean, not only are we part of the college, our grounds, so when we talk about maintaining, I mean, the city does help, but don't do it all. But it's all the other stuff, like the labyrinth and the healing garden. And if you're to take a look at that, if you go online and see it, you see that how beautiful that is. But that is all done from people donating their time, and everything is donated. So it takes a lot of upkeep, and not just the people from the gatehouse enjoy it, but the people in the community. And this is so important that they could just come by here and bring your children and not have to worry about anything, and they can come and relax and let your children play, or just come out here and sit on one of these beautiful old trees that are 150 years old behind the house.
We had a lot of high school kids that come and have their lunch here in the park.
I'm not surprised. And by the way, the labyrinth, if you go online and you Google labyrinth, you'll see that our labyrinth is in amongst all the other labyrinths that are on the internet as well.
Worldwide labyrinth locator. We have been added to that as a labyrinth.
So if you want to take a look at it, aside from our website, you can go on there and see that we've made that list. So that's totally awesome.
That's amazing.
And that was donated too.
That was donated too as well. Like everything here has been pretty much donated, and how we function. And it's just like our time. I think most people don't really get what's really involved in what we do here. And it's great to come here and do the healing, which I've done. And I've stayed on, of course, but And my healing process will probably be the rest of my life anyway, but to whatever degree and level that may be. But point being is that I came here, and it didn't cost me a dime to come in the door, and the people have been, you know, it's hard really even to put words to it. I mean, other than, you know, fabulous and incredible and awesome, it can go on. But it's the sort of care that I got from coming here. And it's probably one of the biggest reasons why I've stayed here is because not only have I gotten my voice, I finally have a voice, but people actually do care about what you think and what you feel. And there's not a cost to it. There's no agenda, no hidden agenda, just that it's about you and helping you find you again. And people don't get that, but this is a place that helped me find me. And thousands of others that I've seen come through here as well. So this is truly a beautiful place, not just outside, but inside as well.
Thank you, Stuart. You're a beautiful person.
Oh, thank you. So now we're going to do, we're going to sidestep a little bit here, and we're going to talk a little bit about kind of what we do here, although we're going to talk about a little bit what we do. I guess it's the easiest way to say it, like I've already said it already. So I have a couple of questions here for the ladies, which I'm going to throw out. And this is really what we do here, and we talk about this stuff. So this will give you a better idea of why we are fundraising and doing what we do for the community. And this is what it is. It's community-based. And when I came in here, this is the same stuff that I did to help myself. And I use the term help myself. The gatehouse does not tell you what to do or what you should do. We're just open up the door. We come in and we talk about some things, and we go from there. So anything that I've done for myself, I've done for myself. The gatehouse didn't take me by the hand and do it for me. I did it myself, as I've seen everybody else come in here. It's about peer support and supporting one another. So, folks, this is truly a beautiful place. If you're ever given the opportunity where you do want to get some help for yourself and you want to help yourself, this is a perfect place to come. So now we're going to talk about some things which which we talk about. And I guess the first thing I would like to ask you, let's talk about the stages of recovery. Now, in the beginning, we were talking about only four stages, but there's actually more than that we talk about. But let's just talk about some of them. So would you like to just jump in?
Sure. Let's talk about my favorite one.
What's your favorite one?
Denial.
Oh, denial. Yes, that is a good one. That is a really good one to start off with.
Denial. You know, we were talking, Saber and I, actually yesterday about that healing is not a linear process.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and Saber, feel free to jump in any time.
Sure.
That sometimes when we're facilitating in the groups, that participants will share, well, I should be further along, or they may compare themselves
shoulds.
To other. Exactly.
Shoulds.
Shoulds is not allowed in our groups. It's capacity driven and capacity focused. But, you know, the first stage usually is the first stage. A stage, I should say, instead of the first stage, although it's listed as the first stage in our book. People can go between acceptance of, you know, yes, it happened, to denying that it happened. And it is all what it is for the person. It's not necessarily that they're any worse off or better off if they're in denial, or they're in the acceptance, or they're in the advocacy piece.
Part of the reason or why individuals who are survivors experience denial, which is very, very understandable, because of the stigmatization related to sexual assault. And where does this come from? It usually comes from our social surroundings, because the message that we get in society is that, you know, we start blaming the survivor. So the survivor is afraid to disclose, to talk about it. So we engage in victim blaming. Mm-hmm. The other reason is, and part of that victim blaming, is the person who is kind of, you know, not sure of coming out, is because the person could experience being berated, being made feel guilty that it was her fault, his fault. And all of these things begin to play on the person's mind. And that feeds the denial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this couldn't have happened to me, or this didn't happen to me. So this, we need to understand that denial is a part of coping as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that there is no, and as Maria mentioned, healing is not linear. Very often you hear this question, well, why didn't you come out with your story before? Well, there is no a timeline, there is no particular schedule, because it is so personal, it is so subjective. For each survivor, the timing could be different. The other reason for that is that we don't put time limits on this, because there's nothing to be gained. In fact, everything to be lost by putting time limit, because retelling one story, talking about one's experience with a trauma of sexually, so it can be very re-traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is gained by putting time limits. Everything is lost. And why I say everything is lost, because in a sense, what we are doing is we're giving the perpetrators the permission, you know, an implicit permission to continue perpetrating the assault, perpetrating the harm, perpetrating the hurt with impunity. So I want to make that connection between putting time limits and recognizing and acknowledging that healing is very personal, very subjective, and therefore it has no time limits.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it can be very re-traumatizing for people who share their story with someone who hasn't earned the right to hear their story.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Dr. Brené Brown talks about in her series around boundaries. Like if you share too soon with someone who hasn't earned the right to hear your story, they may say something like, why didn't you tell me sooner, or why did, or that wasn't that
Former
bad
failure.
Are you sure it was like that, right? And that really puts the person back into, you know, maybe I shouldn't have said anything, or maybe I deserve this, or maybe I caused it, you know. And that can lead them into the proverbial spiraling down into whatever their coping
yeah.
strategy is.
And that point is so important, Maria, to clarify, because I at Gatehouse we truly believe that the people, the person, the individuals who walk through the door, they should be the one In other words, he or she should be the one to determine when, to whom, how, to tell the retell the story or verbalize the experience of being sexually assaulted in their own words, in their own time, and in the manner that is most comfortable for that person.
That's awesome. That's very well said and so very important. Thank you for saying so.
Exactly why in our intake process, people ask, what's the intake process like? Do I have to bring anything? I said, just bring yourself. And sometimes it takes a few tries for them to actually make it up those five steps. It's the most difficult five steps that some survivors have said that they've taken on their lives. Exactly, Stuart. And when they come in and share their story, some of them ask, you know, do you want to hear details or specifics? I always say to them, it's what you want to share, what you're comfortable with sharing. You don't have to tell me your story if you don't want to. It's about their capacity when they're ready to say what they want to say. And also, we don't share the intake forms with the facilitators in the group because that, for them, again, it's the opportunity for the participant, the survivor, to come in and tell their story to whom, when, at their discretion.
And that's so important because I, as I mentioned in my introduction, I am a volunteer facilitator for the drop-in. Now, by drop-in means people can come in, the individual can come in when he or she wants to. The drop-ins are not time-bound. And to the point that Maria mentioned, the intake form is not. And I know from my personal experience that I did not see anyone's intake. I'm meeting the individuals for the first time. And in my experience, in the sessions that I ran, each of the sessions we had more than 10 to 12 people coming in. And so over those sessions, you sometimes had the same people coming in, and at other times they were totally new. There were times when everyone was new to me, and that's how it goes.
And, you know, I can add to this as well, again, and I mean, myself being a facilitator at all, and totally agree and appreciate what you're saying, but the beautiful thing about not looking at them is that we're able to discover what they want to discover to us, and watching them gain their voice. So it's watching and seeing the trust come together, and then learning these things. So, you know, something to be said about not looking at a file.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's better off just let the person tell you when they feel they trust you.
And Stuart, that's again so important as a facilitator, bearing witness.
Mm-hmm.
To each person's journey of healing. What I've learned is that the model that we use at Gatehouse of support groups, and we have different kinds of groups, is because we acknowledge, we recognize that individuals who are on this healing journey learn from each other. And this is why you've emphasized that these groups are supportive and they peer support.
Yes.
So while they're regaining their voice, they are also regaining a vocabulary or learning a new vocabulary, to express the pain, the how it felt, what it felt like. And that in a way it is by hearing others share their stories and parts of their journey, how far they've come and how far they're yet to go, or the fact that because it's not linear, it sometimes feels like you've taken two steps forward and three steps back.
Or 20.
But hearing it from your peer has a different kind of legitimacy to the words and to the message. Mm-hmm. And it becomes very reassuring for the listener, the survivor who's listening to that.
Well, thank you for that. So how about another one?
All right, confused awareness.
And that's a lovely one too, confused awareness.
Just in case anybody wants to take a look at the original book, this was adapted from The Adult Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse by Tom Wilkin, 2002, from his book. So confused awareness is where people begin to recognize the connection between their past trauma and their present concerns, and the new awareness fosters anxiety, panic, and potentially fear again. So it's almost like that stage where people are like, I let the cat out of the bag. I shouldn't have said it. What? Now I'm exposed. What do I do next? Right. And trying to deal with that new reality of, okay, so I've accepted. No, I've just said it, and I'm no longer denying this anymore. It did happen. So there's a bit of an acknowledgement, but then there's also this associated fear.
Right, and along the same line, at that stage, what the individual begins to see is begin to understand the relationship between present behavior and past trauma.
And that's scary.
And that can be very scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I like to often call that? Instead of confused awareness, I prefer to call it confused vulnerability.
Just confused.
Confused vulnerability is what it is.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's amazing. Confused vulnerability. That's awesome.
Yeah,
write that down.
And this is why I do, I don't.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Of that vulnerability and the confusion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard,
thank
you know.
Thank you, Stuart. That's a good one.
We're going to write that down.
I'm so honored. Like, I've been here, for the time that I've been here, I've been able to go through this book more times than I can count now. And I've done a lot of groups now. So in my experience, that's where I came up with that, not just for myself, but from others.
Okay. Thank you, Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So reaching out is the next proverbial
right.
stage where they can be in a situation which, you know, being silent is no longer, you know, they want to reach out. They actually join a support group, or they find therapy, or they go to a friend, or they may even journal to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And linking it to what we said between the present experiences of either panic, anxiety, to the past trauma, when they recognize that, they reach out, because they are beginning to understand that the silence is becoming a bigger burden
mm-hmm.
than actually retelling the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to take the risk of telling one story than to remain silent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm glad you said that too. And in my experience, that's how it worked out for me, because I spent all those years in silence, and then I couldn't hold it any longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that's when I found the gatehouse, and that was where I was able to solve that problem. So I can totally relate to that.
Thank you, Stuart.
Mm.
Did I say that denial was my favorite? I think this one's my favorite, anger.
Oh, yes.
After survivors reach out and ask, you know, for some support, they may become more angry or have experiences of intensified anger as a result of, you know, starting to come to terms with, yes, it happened, and then coming to terms too with the impact of the abuse. So that could intensify the anger that a survivor feels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's week 4 of our program. We take people through a whole, you know, purpose of an anger journal, and what does anger look like? What's beneath the anger? We talk about anger around here as a secondary emotion, where there's an iceberg, and beneath that anger response, there's often things like shame, guilt, being lied to, or being re-victimized, being not listened to, those kinds of things, shame, guilt. Again, so many layers to this, but anger is a very valid response to.
And you have a right to be angry.
Exactly.
Yes, the person has the right. You're absolutely right, Stuart. One of the things that I have learned in through my professional work, and also through self-reflection and my own journey of dealing with emotions and different kinds of trauma, is that anger can be quite a motivating factor.
I will not disagree with you there.
No, can you explain? Please, could you explain?
What I mean by that is that anger can be a useful emotion because once we start processing where that anger is coming from. And remember, you said that survivors have a reason to be angry. You're absolutely right. So we begin to, individuals begin to process that. They are processing where that anger is coming from and coming to the realization that I, as a survivor, have every right to be angry because what was done to me is not right. It is not acceptable. It is not something that I should be ashamed of. Actually, the perpetrator should be ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
So this anger then becomes, once we get to that realization, what we do is we start using that anger to begin the healing process. And it will come up from time to time as we face different aspects of our story of trauma. Secondly, that by not, and I think it would be very, very important to share this. If we don't take time to reflect on our anger and see the capacity within that emotion to start mobilizing that self-care, mobilizing concern for our own health. And when I'm talking about health, I'm talking about mind, body, and soul, or spirit. Because if we give in to the anger, and we are giving anger more empowerment than we're giving empowerment to ourselves. In other words, we empower anger, but we're disempowering ourselves.
Mm.
And I think that's a good segue into the next, mm-hmm. one of the next mm-hmm. phases, which is depression.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That survivors recall, you know, the messaging they received as children, whether that be from the perpetrator or the family that may have harbored a perpetrator, that they start to feel sad. And it's almost like a mourning for grieving for a lost childhood, right? The loss of childhood innocence is something that I know has been brought up in most of the groups I've facilitated. But the depression is definitely a factor for most survivors of sexual abuse. And sometimes it goes unrecognized as it's not recognized as depression. It may foster anger. It may be a side symptom of depression. Or depressive
anger
symptoms.
Is part
yeah.
of depression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it also, with those feelings, as Maria mentioned, you know, it's because the person begins to start questioning, and sometimes even moving from questioning to believing, all the invalidating messages
mm-hmm.
that the perpetrator has. The perpetrator has accused
mm-hmm.
them of.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not worthy becomes mm-hmm. quite the message in the person, survivor's head. And because in society, as I said at the outset, there's so much of stigma, there's so much of blaming the victim. So depression comes out through that too. Who do I tell my story to? Nobody's going to believe me. I'm not worthy. And
mm-hmm.
this is what we hear from survivors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying that. So the next one.
Which leads us into clarity of feelings and emotions. So for survivors of sexual abuse, it's to express their feelings, right? To get some clarification on what is it that they're feeling. I've heard so many people here express that there's a mind-body disconnect to begin with in the aftermath
mm-hmm.
of trauma. So even fostering those connections between that disconnect. And also, what are they truly feeling? Right, because sometimes there's no clarity in what the actual feeling is. There's a thought, but they don't connect the feeling. I ask someone, how are you feeling? And they say, well, I think about this today and I think about that. And then I'll say, but I asked you how you're feeling,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's talk about what's the emotional state that you're in, not only your emotive state, but what is happening in your body. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tuning into pain sensations or exactly, and that fosters that mind-body disconnect and bringing that connection more tightly together through asking, how are you feeling? And it was interesting when you talked about, you know, the messaging that you will receive from perpetrators. Not too long ago, someone mentioned that how are you feeling was a question that their perpetrator asked them. So even that question itself may be,
mm-hmm.
you know, a triggering question to ask a
insight.
Participant. Exactly.
Yeah.
I know you use the word insights. I prefer the word triggers.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a disconnect here between that, but I get we're insightful. We're going to be talking a little
I
bit
know,
about language today,
that,
but that's really good. Don't bring it up, Stuart. No, it's all good. But insight, yes, an insight and a trigger, but control issues, but a trigger around that. Yeah, exactly.
And that, again, I want to link up the importance of peer support. It is by interacting with peers who have gone through similar experiences. When the person listens to what that feeling is or how are they feeling,
mm-hmm.
say, oh, I can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way. And suddenly what you find when I look at the expression on the person, well, it's that aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was only I'm
mm-hmm.
feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that others felt the same. So in that aha moment, you can just begin to feel that sense of empowerment that the person is experiencing. And I feel that that's the moment where healing begins.
Yeah, and quite simply, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well put.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah.
And I thought of the word connection when you talked
mm-hmm.
about
connection
healing.
Connection is great,
when
too.
You mm-hmm. foster that connection with someone who says me too. And or the other thing that may happen in group two as well as part of that is that that one survivor says something, the other survivor goes, oh, that's exactly how I feel. You gave me the language that I was looking for and was struggling with for I don't know how many years to say how I feel, right? So that's the beauty of these groups. Really, it's talking about the worst experiences of a person's life, but doing it in a compassionate, empathetic, and safe way that fosters connection.
And what it also fosters is that each of the participants in a group feels a sense of themselves that they are whole.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm talking about whole, I'm talking about whole.
Mm-hmm. Not perfect.
Not perfect, but whole.
Exactly.
And if I can quote Arthur Lockhart, it better be whole than perfect. Mm?
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Very true.
Mm.
And you mentioned about that language again, and I think that's what being in a group, that's what reaching out to being mm-hmm. part of a group helps with.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next stage is regrouping, so actually having more positive emotions and being with those and being okay with feeling good about yourself, about others, about your experiences, the great and not so great, and accepting that, you know, the abuse happened. It's a part of your story, but it's not your whole story.
Yeah, and that experience of abuse does not define you.
Mm-hmm.
And that regrouping is about I am not defined by that. I am much more than that.
And once you realize that, it's well, all I can say from personal experience is a beautiful thing.
Exactly. And part of regrouping too is learning to trust oneself,
mm-hmm.
right? Because survivors of sexual abuse often don't
mm-hmm.
trust their instincts, and their instincts may come up and say, that person doesn't look like a great person. They'll have the feelings, but they won't trust their instinct and still repeat these cycles of coping strategies that we're going to be talking about later on. But yeah.
Maria just reminded me that a while ago I read something, I believe it was said by Dr. Conlin. She said, what is fear? F-E-A-R stands for forgetting essential available resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that stuck with me. And when I started volunteering here at Gatehouse, I said, aha, this is what it is, that when people come in seeking assistance from us, what we are doing is we're helping them deal with that fear
mm.
and putting them in touch with resources within themselves and resources that are around them. So when she broke down, her name is Patty Conlin, fear, again, I'm going to repeat this, F stands for forgetting, E stands for essential, A for available, and R for resources.
I have to remember that.
Exactly, like, you know, forgetting that you have a friend who you could reach mm-hmm. out to, forgetting that journaling once helped mm-hmm. you cope with something, you know, from the past, or there be sexual abuse or neglect or, you know, abandonment, those kinds of things. Forgetting that pets are there for you, mm-hmm. that you can come home to your pets and they're, you know, they want to greet you. Forgetting that, you know, that maybe there's family members, because some people's perpetrators are in their family. There are family members that they can reach out to and trust. So, yeah, that's an interesting acronym. I like that. I'm going to write that down. So write that down, Mike. The last stage, proverbial stage of healing, is moving on. So a shift in focus from the negative experiences of the past to also feeling like trust in the self and able to move forward, that these experiences, like Sabra said, do not define the individual, and they can move past that emotional energy that is in that story. And also moving on to may involve for some people what you're doing, Stuart, advocacy work, mm-hmm. awareness raising, and being with other people who are, you know, what you're doing here, Stuart, is you have a weekly web radio show that goes across the planet because it's on the World Wide Web. Anybody can access it. And you have listeners all over the world
mm.
who are listening to this. So you are in that moving on stage by doing this kind of work, right? That does not necessarily mean that everybody has to do this kind of work to be in a moving on stage, right? I talk a lot about emotional attachment. A lot of people think they call, I've heard so many, especially men have called recently saying they want to become advocates. And I asked them about some of the work that they've done. And some have done some therapy, others have never done anything, but they want to advocate for others, which is beautiful. I'm not shooting that down. But at the same time, to be mindful of where they're at in their own healing, to not potentially re-traumatize themselves and or others by doing the work when they're not maybe ready yet to do that kind of work.
That's a very, very important message, Maria. And I think what it underscores is that it takes a community to offer a different kinds of services. And by community, I mean individuals with different kinds of interests, different kinds of strengths.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of the different strengths or regardless of the differences, each one has strengths. And we invite people to offer what they are willing to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And are ready to offer or to give in terms of enhancing and supporting the work of the gatehouse.
Yeah, and one must watch themselves when advocating for themselves, because it's pretty straightforward. I've seen this countless times now, is where one will have all the best intentions in the world and realize that in the long run that they didn't take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria said this in the beginning of this part of the conversation, is that it'll backfire on you and you'll be re-traumatized and you won't even know what to do with yourself.
Mm-hmm. And this is where linear is not healing is not a linear process.
No.
They can go back into denial. They can go back into regrouping. They can fall into a depressive episode.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing to be mindful of too is, you know, the person's capacity also to take care of themselves, their self-care.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing to take care of themselves? And we do a lot of that kind of work around here with our facilitators, with our staff,
constantly,
with our volunteers.
Constantly, all the time.
Self-reflection is, we should have a t-shirt. We should.
Yeah.
We have the capacity to have a t-shirt on self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other part of it is that many survivors have shared with me that what they feel that they're not worthy of compassion. Because how could somebody do this to me? And the answer to that question for them in their minds is because I'm not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
So for many survivors, not all survivors, but for many survivors, self-care, self-compassion is quite is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I can even say for myself, and I'm a pretty heavy advocate, and not only do I volunteer here, but through social media. So learning and understanding when I need to take a break was something I had to kind of figure out. Well, I've always been I went to school hard knocks, so this mm-hmm. is one of the things I had to learn along the path. But I have really good boundaries in regards to that. And anybody that's listening that does advocate on social media, learn to take a break for yourself. Because you can go and go. I mean, you got nobody looking at you, nobody watching you. Only the person looking after you is you while you're doing it. It's great what you're doing, and please do not take what I'm saying as you should or you shouldn't or anything. But what I'm getting at is your self-care is primarily number one. It's great you're doing this, but make sure you take care of yourself. That's all we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is why we debrief facilitators after
yes.
the groups.
Yes.
So they stay behind for half an hour, 40 minutes to talk about what surfaced for them as a facilitator and what they could do differently, if anything, in the session. And so that they don't take that stuff home either. We want to be mindful of the potential for, you know, our facilitators to be re-traumatized themselves. Most of them are survivors themselves and are coming with lived experience. And these sessions are very rewarding in that they're very healing. People are processing their emotions in a safe place, but also it could bring up their own insightful experiences, quote unquote insightful experiences as facilitators and as survivors and as human beings, right? Survivor or not, you know, sitting in a room and hearing someone tell their story about how they were, you know, severely abused as a child is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy, and you have to be mindful of your own feelings and also the other person's feelings, of course, in that interaction.
It might be useful if you would request that you let the audience know what are the different kinds of groups we have here.
Yes.
So we have our phase one is the initial program that everyone is invited into, and that's a 15-week peer-to-peer support group. There are separate groups for men and women and trans persons. They choose which group they are, feel most connected with. Actually, we're thinking about hosting a phase one co-ed and just having, you know, no gender identity specific to that group. It's just a human beings who are survivors of sexual abuse over the age of 18.
That would be fantastic.
Right? That's something that we're looking into exploring. But right now we do have separate gender groups. We have a phase two. So once a person has done the 15 weeks, they go into a 16-week co-ed, a men and women together person group. And that is mindfulness, gratitude, pause, a mindfulness-based program to talk about core belief systems. Because we were going to talk a lot about shame tonight too. And we have been talking about shame. But core belief systems like I'm not worthy is one of the hardest, most difficult core belief to eradicate from a person's narrative. So when we're talking about shame, I'm not worthy is owning that experience of unworthiness, right? So a lot of survivors will go through that one, and we'll talk about core beliefs, and then we'll set up goals in phase two to talk about moving forward. What does that look like? And that's sort of toward the middle of the program, we get to a part about an F word that that survivors of sexual abuse don't necessarily like to associate with, but it's not prescribed. It's forgiveness for anyone listening.
What?
And yes, it's not that other F word, Stuart, although that one does get used a lot, but it's forgiveness.
Right.
And you know, in recent groups, actually, we have reframed that as letting go. It is what the person identifies with. We are not telling them to forgive themselves. We are not telling them to forgive the offender. We're not telling them what forgiveness is. Actually, we ask the question, what does forgiveness mean to you? And that's usually when we get the other F word at us
that's
as facilitators.
Right.
And then we joke around about that. And then we really get into these meaningful discussions on letting go or forgiving or, you know, detaching the emotional energy, however it is defined for that person. And a lot of survivors will talk about letting go of, you know, the blame of themselves. Others do talk about forgiving the perpetrator and have done that kind of work and have reconciled with the perpetrator. It just, again, depends on where the person's at and what is relevant to them in their journey. We are not prescribing this is how you heal. These stages, again, not linear. Take it with a grain of salt. We are here just talking about what does happen for people who have been sexually abused as children. That's phase two. We have an art therapy group that is facilitated by Full Circle Art Therapy Center. Again, shout out to Lacey Ford and Pearl Lee, beautiful human beings. And I talked last year at, it was last year at Art for Heart and talked about the importance of how art therapy, sometimes people are not ready yet to explore in a peer-to-peer group, and they use art to draw out the inner vocabulary. Like you talked about healing the soul, right? Mm-hmm. I think art gets to the soul of people. Art draws out those feelings and thoughts that are in the subconscious, and people have these very moving experiences, and it gives them, I think, the vocabulary to express themselves. So I said that, and I'll continue saying that because I truly believe in the power of art and healing through art and also healing through narrative type interventions, which is what we do in phase two, and talking about goal setting. What is the meaning that we want to associate with our lives? What is the life you want to live is a very magical question. Mm-hmm. If you take nothing from this broadcast tonight, aside from this question, what is the life you want to live?
Yeah.
Write that down. Think about it. What is the life that you're living now? What are some of the things that you can do? And these are not massive interventions. You don't have to go out and spend millions of dollars. You don't have to get liposuction. You don't have to get whatever it is that they inject into the bags
Botox.
Under the eyes, Botox.
Yeah.
Like, I love my wrinkles. It's
ice
great. wrinkles are awesome. They say that you have earned the right to be on the planet for a little while longer. So embrace your wrinkles. Exactly. Embrace the bags, because we've been up all night trying to figure out what are we going to say tonight on this radio show, and it's turning out really awesome. But refocus me, Stuart. You're the host.
Okay. Back on track again now.
I ramble.
Okay. We were talking about groups. So we're talking about
our therapy group. Thank you, Stuart.
And we have a few other
We do have the drop-in that Sabra is a volunteer in as well. That runs Thursday, 7 to 9, and that's for people who have done at least an intake. Yes. And we have a, we are also in, the Gatehouse is a small, a little house in Etobicoke that has international energy. Like, we direct our energy outward everywhere. We want people to know. Our manuals are on our website. I don't know any other agency, I've never seen this, where they put their program manuals for free, downloadable PDF files on our website. So if you can go to thegatehouse.org, click on adult program or phase one, phase two manuals are right there for you to see. And that, I think, helps people who are in isolation, right? We talk about moving people out of isolation and into belonging. And that's what these community, these groups do.
And that, I want to just emphasize that that kind of generosity comes from one of our values, that we do not want to put barriers up in the path of healing. So if you know, we started off the conversation about money, but barrier in terms of not being able to afford a manual is a barrier. But Gatehouse works with whomever is ready to start the healing journey, and we will provide them with the tools that they need.
And another program, thank you for sharing that, Sabra. Another program that is, again, transformational, unique, does not exist anywhere in this country, in all our provinces and territories, is the partner support group.
That's right.
Right. So we have a group for partners and or support persons of survivors of sexual abuse. The partners often feel left out of the conversation because they are not maybe involved, unless they're in therapy, they still feel a bit left out of what's going on for their partner who's a survivor, healing through this, finding their voice, learning about healthy boundaries. They may say things like, you're not the person I married. Who are you? I like this new person, but I, how do we interact now? What's our communication going to be like?
And these ideas, whether it's the group for partners or the labyrinth or the healing garden, it comes through the conversations that people have within this house and listening to each other.
That's a beautiful point that you've made, because a lot of how this is all came about is just from conversation.
Conversations.
Exactly. And the partners group's been running since 2014 now.
That's right.
4 years old.
Yeah, 4 years
as
old.
As long as your radio show has been around. Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's as long. Actually, I've been part of the program, partners program, almost as long as that as well.
Amazing.
And that speaks to the power of respecting individuals.
Mm.
So that, and when they feel respected, they feel that they are heard, they feel that they are seen, that they are worthy. And this is when they have these creative ideas within them they can share. And it is through that sharing that we are strengthening Gatehouse.
And the larger community.
And the larger community.
We talked a lot about here. You said at the beginning of the show, we've affected 20,000 people. It's way more than 20,000,
yeah.
I believe, because we're talking about one person. They likely affect four other people, if not more, in their lives. So the effect of taking these groups, being here and hearing me too, finding their voice, putting up healthier boundaries, forming healthier relationships, has this massive domino effect in their lives. So they're affecting their brothers, sisters, cousins, friends, workplace. Everybody is affected by this work.
And Maria, and through that, what you raise and remind me, and you know better than I in terms of some of the international way, as a result of people who come here, who are Canadian, and how they have, perhaps the two, the one in Bolivia, and the one in... I forget the African country. Africa is such a huge continent. People don't realize that.
So Ronke in Nigeria.
Nigeria.
Sosawaka is her agency, and they help women and children. They help, you know, prevention and awareness, education about child brides was recently something that they abolished, right? Like marrying off little girls, you know, to very older
men.
Exactly. So that's something that she does. She risks her life by doing that kind of work, right? And we've connected with her. We've connected with Brisa D'Angelo over in Bolivia, who has a Breeze of Hope. And they have programming for women and children and women who want to also charge their perpetrators. They have counseling, all kinds of
and
different
it was
supports.
Through the exposure mm-hmm. to Gatehouse
mm-hmm.
that she was the one in Bolivia who had the first ever march.
Yes.
Which was a co-ed, multi-generational that went out on the streets of a city in Bolivia to say that we are not going to accept this. We have a voice.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're to go onto the website or
yeah.
you find it on Facebook, I went from a few hundred to thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how many people are marching on the streets.
She's yeah. trying to get that march on August 9th. It's the date of her court date that she took her offender to court, that she formed that that march and wants countries all over the world to celebrate too and march on August 9th to raise awareness about the impact of childhood sexual abuse prevention and also believing survivors, right? In her own story, and I'm not saying anything she doesn't say in public, she wasn't believed. And it was, you know, a person who really harmed her and going through the courts was, she had to become her own lawyer at one point, right?
Yeah.
She went to law school. She became
yeah.
a lawyer. She learned about the brain. She became a therapist almost, right? Like she became educated in that realm to help other people too and started Breeze of Hope to help, you know, children through play therapy, art therapy. Brad and Arthur went down there to a couple of years back to train their program facilitators. They don't speak English. We had translator speaking in Spanish. So Arthur would say something and then it got translated. And then Brad did some coping and meditation strategies with the kids, including Kung Fu and Budwa Jin. And they love that, right? And we have that a piece of that on film. James Buffin, who is the film director that has done, thank you so much, James, if you're listening. He's been on the show quite a few times. Has done a lot of phenomenal work in promoting the Gatehouse and making these beautiful films to share the knowledge and the ideas and the energy of the Gatehouse with everybody. And his work is on our website too under media. So you can find like the turn into, not into the light, but
Illuminating
Silence. Thank
yeah,
you. So that documentary is on there. And if you haven't seen it, it's on our website. Again, free to watch, free to download.
There's one little key component too that with the Partners Program where we need to mention too is we support the non-survivors as well, which we have a drop-in twice a month
mm-hmm.
for them as well.
Yes, they're the second Monday of every month and the last Monday of every month, with the exception of two Mondays in December. They're only meeting, I believe, once in December. The dates will be posted on our website shortly. But they meet just partners only, and it's facilitated by partners who are non-survivors of sexual abuse. So they have those Me Too moments for themselves. It's a free program. Nobody else in this country does this kind of work. Aside from maybe couples counseling and therapy, which is more formal processes, this is Me Too community peer support.
Peer support. And there's a couple other things we do as well. Reconciliation. We have writing group.
Pat Adams, the
yes.
lady is on fire.
Mm.
So Pat has started two different programs here, you know, took it and ran with it. Thank you, Pat, if you're listening. And you've had Pat on the show as well.
My first lady.
She started an estrangement to reconciliation here with her lovely co-facilitator, John. And they run this 15-week group. And it's for people looking at what is estrangement? What is reconciliation? What does that look like? Do they want to reconcile? And they do talk a little bit about the F word, forgiveness, in there. But it's more about estrangement. And it could be estrangement with the self. Right, that mind-body disconnect could be a topic that they talk about. It's very much too, you know, person-centered. The participants inform to the curriculum that we have here. It's not that, again, we give them a manual, and if they go off a little bit on off-topic, on one topic area, it's not going to be, you know, oh, we didn't go through that. We have to make sure we go through that. It's what needed to happen in that topic. The person had a thought, a feeling related to the topic area, and we'll run with it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we can always go back.
That emphasizes the importance of learning through conversation. Earlier we mentioned it's learning a vocabulary, and this is why we emphasize listening to each other in the group, because that's how they learn, they clarify.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's one more group which we cannot forget, and we have to talk about YAC, our youth.
Yes, we have a young adult program. It's intensive. It's 5 weeks, and we just ran a session with four beautiful human beings, 18 to 24 years old, and that's the age cutoff for that group. We generally don't have long waiting lists. We were at a point where we didn't have a waiting list at all, which was phenomenal. But we're getting to that point where we do have a bit of a waiting list for our women's group, for example. We don't have space until next year in February that we're now taking participants in for next year. We do have that drop-in that people can access while they're waiting for a group, so it's not like they're not left with anything. There's also a one-on-one peer support that people can access as well, and that's up to 6 sessions with 1 peer facilitator. Again, we're not doctors or therapists. We're not telling people what they should do or how to live their lives. We're here to listen and empathize, and some of us say me too, others are not in that space, but me too to isolation, me too to loss and grief, me too to not feeling heard or being invalidated, those kinds of common experiences. You talked about the YAPS, the Young Adult Program, and yes, it's a 5-week group. We talk, there's an art component to the YAP as well, and that's a little bit different. Our phase 1 program for the adults is almost like a talk therapy kind of thing, but it's not therapy. It's therapeutic. In nature, because that's people are correct. Talking, saying me too. It's not led by a therapist, it's led by a peer facilitator. So our YAP group or young adult program, YAP, it's easy to remember, the YAP, they have a 5-week program. The last week, the second last week, actually, week 4, we did a vision board, right? So it's just a bunch, it's kind of in silence too. We didn't say much in the group at that time. So we have a whole bunch of magazines, lots of art supplies, and people get together and make their vision board. So what do they see for their lives moving forward? What are the goals? Some had travel, others had degrees, others had, you know, a dog or a cat. They want to get a pet. It just, you know, where they're at. And we talk a lot about, I know the T word, triggers or insights. I'm not going to let that one go. Here's an insight. It's an insight, but I'm not letting it go yet. I'm not ready for that stage, Stuart. Don't make me do it.
You're not ready for letting go.
I'm not ready for the letting go stage. No, the moving on from triggers, no. But looking at what are those insightful experiences and memories that remind people of the abuse and how they can healthily deal with that. It's not necessarily that, as we talk a lot about too, coping strategies around here where people, I've told people who come in and say, well, I just used cocaine again last night. I'm like, you're alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you used something that helps you stay alive. Now we can look at maybe other things that you can do within your capacity to make those choices and other supports that you may need around that. People use drugs, alcohol, sex to deal with feelings of unworthiness.
Yeah, and talking about those things when people do say, oh, you know what, last night I did this,
mm-hmm.
is a way to, again, reflect on that connection between the past trauma and the present.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about it helps them to each time to increase their capacity in terms of recognizing what's going on and what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And you mentioned the vision board. Very, very important. Because what it does, it reignites the value of aspiration.
Mm.
We are here not to tell anyone what to aspire,
mm-hmm.
but we do come up with ways that are going to facilitate people getting in touch with their dreams, with their hopes, and what they would like to see. And when I say it ignites that aspiration, is about, I am capable. I can.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to I can believe in myself.
Mm. So it's kind of
and that's countering that question, am I worthy?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And thank you for saying that. And before I move on to the next thing, which we are going to talk a little bit of worthiness before we shut her down for the night, but the Gatehouse also offers a host of resources. We have a library which we've started, mm-hmm. Which we can put this out there for any authors that have published books. As well, thank you, Brené Brown, for the collection of books you've mm-hmm. sent to our library. But if there's any other authors out there that are in that have written stories about survivors and victims, anything helping regarding self-help and regarding what we do, we would love if you would send your books and put be part of our library.
Beautiful. I want to thank Catherine Lilico, who's a student in the Addictions and Mental Health Postgrad Certificate Program,
mm-hmm.
who put that all together. Here for us, yes.
And that's awesome having that kind of library. But the Gatehouse does other stuff too, which we haven't even mentioned. Going out to the communities and talking about mindfulness and doing all kinds of things. You know, making our presence, I guess, known out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes we joke around about having a mobile response team, but like a meditation, the Bodhwa Jin mobile response team. So we're taking Bodhwa Jin meditation and moving it out into community, into probation offices that have had us go out there and do presentations. We have Paula and Brad who go out and do these. They're going into appeal school very soon to do some meditation with young adults there. They've been called out to, you know, the post. So they've done conferences here at Humber College, York University, where they do meditation with people out there, just to spread that as a self-care tool that people can use. We call it like tools for the tool belt or the toolbox that people can pull out when they need, when they're having those moments of fear or anxiety. And what was the acronym again, Sabra, for the fear?
It's forgetting essential available resources.
There we go. When we forget that we have meditation in our toolbox, it's a great reminder to say, meditation worked for me some years ago. Let me try this. Some people go to like prayer and spirituality. Yeah. Some people put their hand on a tree and just feel into the energy of that. Some people hug trees.
Mm-hmm.
I had one person who invited me out to the park to hug a tree. And I'm like, this is different. we'll try this, right? So whatever works for the person. And that was actually pretty cool, like experience, right? Before I think like, what am I doing hugging a tree now? But it fostered some connection with the earth, a moment of pause, paying attention unveils sacred experiences. When we stop, pause, and reflect on what we're doing, how we're doing it, that helps us to think about what is the life I want to live.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying so. And there's one other program which the Gatehouse has been doing for the last few years, is we teach assist, led by Brad Hutchins, and which we're going out to the community and at all levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be left unsaid. Mm-hmm. I wanted to throw that in there as well.
Led by Brad Hutchinson, Paula Cordero, and Stuart Thompson, right? Mm-hmm. They're all assist trainers. Yes. And give people, again, more tools for the tool belt and how to not necessarily intervene, but support people who are having the idea. Exactly. Their idea of suicide or committing suicide or suiciding, I should say. Mm-hmm. And or those who are helpers in the community, social workers. The very question. Again, there's maybe some shame attached to this question.
Absolutely.
Are you thinking about suicide? Right? That's a fundamental question to opening up. And people are afraid, fear, afraid of opening up that proverbial can of worms. That is a very vital question. That question saves people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask someone, are you thinking about suicide? I had to ask someone actually yesterday. Right. And this person reflected and then shared their experience. But that very question put that person at such ease that they could say, no, I'm not. And I've had people say, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can like open. So do you have a plan? How often do you think about it? What's going on for you? Do you have support? All these other follow up questions to make the person also feel heard, not make, but give the conditions for the person to feel heard, right? Often
voice,
that's what's happening. Their voice is taken away. They don't feel heard, and the pain becomes too great, and they want to leave the planet. And there are so many things that person has to offer.
Yeah, because when the person feels that he or she is not heard, the voices within their minds can be magnified.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very debilitating in performing your everyday functions.
Mm.
So this is why Gatehouse is here.
Mm-hmm.
We want to encourage people that if they have had the nasty, traumatizing experience of sexual assault and abuse, that they can come here and they will be heard.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well said, for sure, definitely. Which kind of brings us to this now. Ending the evening. So let's talk a little bit about strategies for coping, and worthy being the, I guess, the operative word here tonight. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I was going to jump in with something. I was like, I was just looking at Sarah going, okay, let her regroup. Go on. I think that one of the things, like when you talk about unworthiness and I'm not worthy, here's something that's really a big struggle. What is self-love,
mm-hmm.
right? And how does that fit in? Like people, I hear this a lot, even in mainstream media, love yourself,
mm-hmm.
love yourself. If you only love yourself, your life will get better. agreed. When you throw in, you know, there's an experience of childhood sexual abuse. There's profound shame. There's guilt. There's the fear of vulnerability. How does a person then reconnect with the self? And we talked a lot about mind and body connection. And the strategies are whatever works for the person, right? So we've talked a little about art therapy here tonight. We've talked about meditation, some journaling, reaching out to people, joining peer-to-peer support groups like the Gatehouse, whatever it is that works for the person. And if something doesn't feel right to a person, I often tell people you have the capacity to tune into that gut feeling that says, this does not feel right. I want to be something different. I want to do something different with my life. Not sure yet what I'm going to do, but maybe reaching out to a person and saying, hey, can I bounce some ideas off of you? Because I'm struggling with fill in the blank.
We also encourage them to try something out. Like, so for example, therapy. They haven't done it. They don't know anybody who has. And so we would encourage them to try it. And if they don't like it, that's okay. Move on to trying something else.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing, message is that find something that you like and that will work for you.
I'm sorry.
So that's one. That's an important message that we give them. And in terms of coping, so in trying different things out and having that that toolbox is a way for them to also to develop the notion of certain rituals. Each one of us has rituals. One of the rituals when the person is feeling a little discombobulated, confused, anxious is mindfulness, and sometimes simply just taking deep breaths and listening to oneself breathing and coming to the realization that one is not breathing deeply but rather quite shallowly.
Mm-hmm.
But once they become aware of that, they become connected to the life force within them and harnessing that power that is within.
I thought of Lloyd's cookies.
Lloyd's cookies,
yes.
I just thought he brought some cookies like 2 days ago. I'm like, those chocolates. Lloyd, if you're listening, you're a beautiful human being.
Well,
he's got peanut butter homemade cookies.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I completely agree with what you said. You know, all jokes aside, Lloyd's cookies are awesome. That's not a joke. But you know, and meditating and self-reflecting and asking, again, that question keeps coming back to me. What's the life you want to live,
mm-hmm.
right? And small rituals,
mm-hmm.
small steps. If the person is feeling overwhelmed and saying, well, you guys are talking a good game about, you know, coping strategies and I can't even get out of bed, then I talk to people about, well, maybe when you do, you make your bed or you put on you take a shower and celebrate that, like celebrate the little things in your life.
And speaking of celebrating the little things in life reminds me that when one of the first very important messages other than listening and welcoming individuals that are dealing with trauma is the whole notion of gratitude.
Gratitude. We haven't mentioned gratitude once tonight.
Well, we have been saying thank you to one another.
Well, I mean,
we've been expressing
gratitude.
Yes, gratitude is massive. And again, it's something that people take for granted,
mm-hmm.
right? Being grateful. Be grateful. And sometimes when people say, well, just be grateful, it sounds very shameful, right? Tuning into being grateful for things in your life, like you can walk, right? I suffer from an arthritic hip. So when I can walk without pain, oh, beautiful, my life is golden, right?
Yes.
High-fiving right here, right? But when I can breathe, you know, no chest infection or any of that stuff, beautiful day. I can see, although I use glasses, but I can see.
And one of the things that I've heard from individuals and groups say that I had isolated myself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so alone. And I feel full of gratitude because I am in a group.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
So those are different ways of expressing one's gratitude. And they can be very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally.
turn to the person who cooked dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Say thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Right? It's as simple as that. It's waking up in the morning and stretching and going, oh, I got another day. I have another opportunity, right? And some people may get up and say, well, God, I have another day, right? But then that's the choice that we make to shift the focus. We can choose mm-hmm. to focus on how much pain we're in, because I can certainly do that all day.
And want to be in.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And or, and that's mm. when I reach for Lloyd's cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And or.
Bag your cookies.
Or, exactly. And or choose to say, I'm going to do a couple of yoga stretches. I'm really grateful that I got another chance to wake up, to greet my kids, to say hello, to say I love you to them, to thank my sister for being a great support, massive support in my life. To thank Stuart, you know, wee hours of the night sending him text messages saying thank you. Boundaries are another topic on this show.
Boundaries, we've got boundaries.
I don't know what those are. But I'm joking. I joke around a lot. I use humor a lot. But it, again, my tool, right?
Is that called deflection?
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know
gosh.
If it's deflection. Hey. This show's getting out of hand.
Oh, my gosh. Behave.
We're having too much fun.
Humor at one own cost is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Being sarcastic or humorous at somebody else's cost is not very good.
That's where we got to be mindful of
yeah.
what's going on there, right? Although I use sarcasm a lot, too. Ooh.
So do I.
I need to go back to those stages and figure out which one that is. Clarity of feelings and emotions, I think. Ding, 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 we have
sarcasm.
A winner.
Could be anger, too.
I like anger masks sarcasm. True, very true, very true. It was something not too long ago that I actually read up about, you know, anger being a depressive symptom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always
Absolutely.
Thought anger is an emotion, secondary emotion, all that stuff. But then I thought,
no.
when I
anger,
read that, I was like, this is interesting.
Anger, sadness are part and parcel of the same coin of depression we cite.
Right.
I don't want to turn this into a therapy session.
But it's all good. Yeah, it's all good.
I mean, we're talking coping strategies. Therapy is a coping strategy
right.
too,
yeah.
right? Reaching out to another person who, you know, is deemed a professional in the field of whatever therapy they practice. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for therapy, like Sabra Desai, she is a psychotherapist by trade, and she is actually taking on clients. So if somebody's looking for a more intensive strategy for coping with trauma, more one-on-one, please feel free to contact Sabra. And her website is sabradesai.com. So sabradesai.com.
Thank you. I was just going to ask you to plug that. That's perfect. Okay, we are coming close to the end here. So maybe we can finish off tonight with a reminder of what we're really talking about here tonight, and that is healing the voice within.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies, would you mind, please, and thank you.
Sure. Join us for Healing the Voice Within, our third annual fundraiser. It's an art auction. There's going to be raffle prizes. There's a silent auction. A drink ticket and food are included in your ticket price. It's $75 a person, and the tickets are on sale via a Canada Help site. You can find the link on our website at www.thegatehouse.org. It's October 4th, 7 to 10 p.m. at the Liberty Grand, which is located at 25 British Columbia Road, Toronto, M6K3C3, on the exhibition grounds. We are going to be in the Centennial Room. Oh, my goodness. I've been in this room twice, and it is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The Liberty Grand is such a beautiful space. Our room actually faces south, so at night, once you know the event is going on, we're going to be seeing the gleaming Lake Ontario and the beautiful lights. So please come and join us. And if you can't join us, make a donation, whether that be a toonie, a dollar, $5. Donate a prize to the event. Make a donation in kind. Someone lost a family member, made a donation in honor of that family member to Healing Voice Within. And we're really grateful for that person's support as well.
Thank you. So what about keynote speakers?
Keynote speaker, again, is the Honorable Peter McKay, who is a politician. He's a lawyer and, again, a huge advocate for child abuse prevention and human trafficking. We have, again, the RCMP Chief Superintendent Michael Lestage, who will be saying a few words. We have Deputy Chief of Peel Regional Police Chris McCord, who will be saying a few words. We have the Honorable MP Mike Tibolo, who is the Minister of Community Safety and Correctional Services, and he will be saying a few words as well. We have our MPP Christine Hogarth for the Lakeshore, Etobicoke Lakeshore, who will also be in attendance. Lots of people coming out to the event supporting, and it'd be great if everybody can join us. And
we need more.
We need more. We need support. The Gatehouse is a charity. We run on donations. We use those donations to the maximum potential. Every dollar is stretched so thin. But there are no more pennies. So
by
I keep saying
that we are a charity.
Pennies are half pennies.
By saying that we are a charity or that the Gate House is a charity, what we mean that we are a non-profit organization.
Thank you for saying that, and that's what we are.
A portion of the ticket is also charitable, and tax receipts are issued after the event. But so you do get a tax benefit, right? There's food and drink included in the ticket, and there is a tax or a charitable portion of that ticket that
is
provided.
And there'll
be some fun. There's a beautiful quartet. I haven't even mentioned them. The Intero Quartet. These folks are amazing. I felt like I was on the Titanic listening to them last year. They were there at the Spoke Club, and oh my goodness, they're back again this year, and they're phenomenal.
Fantastic. Looking really, really looking
forward. Oh, I should mention too, I forgot, and I apologize. If anybody watches the Shopping Channel, Today's Shopping Choice, TSC, Wendy Crystal is our MC.
We were able to
get
that.
Oh,
yes.
She's
our MC. She's a beautiful human being, and she will be sharing her story and why she's contributing and giving her time and energy to the Gate House. So thank you, Wendy, if you're listening to this, for all your support. And
thank
she's a beautiful
you to
human
all
being.
The sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Liuna.
And thank you all the
Liuna, local, international Union of Laborers in North America.
Thank you for saying so. So in finishing, is there a message or something you would like to tell the world before we finish off? Both you ladies?
The world.
It's not local, it's the world.
No matter what's going on any political sphere, hint, hint, or any situation that a person is going on in their lives. I ask myself this question almost every day. And what is the life you want to live? And keep asking yourself that and keep doing things that contribute to that life, whether that be seeking help, engaging in meditation, writing a story, publishing a book online on Wattpad or one of those social media platforms, advocating for people, petting your cat, whatever it is. What is the life you want to live? Go do it.
Thank you.
What
Barbara?
I have to say or share, Peter, I truly believe, and the Gate House believes in every individual being a worthy individual. So believe in yourself, believe in your capacity, and believe in your dreams and hopes.
Thank you ever so much. Ladies, I'd like to thank you ever so much for coming in tonight. I know you're busy, busy all the time, and it's great that you're able to take some time to come in here and talk about this important event that's coming up for the Gate House. And thank you. I can't thank you enough. I mean, as well, like, thank you. I'm like, ooh, thank you.
Thank you.
You are worthy.
You are worthy.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening tonight. If you are in the greater Toronto area next week and you'd like to attend our event, the Healing the Voice Within, you can either call the Gate House at 416-255-5900 or go onto our Gate House website, thegatehouse.org. Or just stop by the Gate House, say hello. But any one of our staff or volunteers would be more than happy to help you. Have a wonderful night. If you haven't done something for yourself tonight, folks, maybe now is the time to do it. Maybe go for a walk, read a really, really good positive book, listen to some really, really good music, take a hot bath, but do something for yourself. Heaven's sakes, self-care. Take care of yourself. Folks, have a great week. I'll see you next Thursday. Actually, I'm not going to be here next Thursday, as I'm going to be at the fundraiser. So the following Thursday, which will be October the... I can't even think right now.
11th.
Yes, the 11th. I'll see you October the 11th. And I'll talk about this event. And like I mentioned in the beginning of the program, Lacey Ford will be coming in on the 27th, if I remember that date correctly. And she will be talking about the event that's just happening, or just about to happen. And she'll share some of the experiences and the stuff that went on. I will only share a little bit. I'm going to save it for Lacey when she comes in. But folks, have a great night. Thank you. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.